Good day, and welcome to the Center for American Progress Swing State Voting Report 12 p.m. conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Anna Chu. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us on the call. My name is Anna Chu. I'm the Policy Director for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. I am joined today with Sam Wersinski. He's the Executive Director of Arizona Advocacy Network. And we're also joined by Robbie Sherwood. He's the Executive Director for Progress Now Arizona. Robbie was also the spokesman for the Protect Your Right to Vote Committee in Arizona. I will start with a brief intro, and then we'll hand it over to Sam and Robbie, and after that, we will open the line for Q&A. So why we're here today? We know that the administration of elections is really largely delegated to officials in more than 3,000 counties or wards in the United States. However, there's really been little attention focused on the county-by-county discrepancies in voter access. Or voting access. So here at the Center for American Progress Action Fund, we have been very engaged in identifying and analyzing some of the barriers to voting. This report that we are releasing today is the first of its kind to draw attention to the fact that two citizens may both live in the same state. However, they may have vastly different voting experiences based on which county they reside in. In this report, we used county-level data to provide a statistical ranking of how some of the most populous counties in the most hotly contested states performed for voter accessibility. This shows how which counties performed well in a state and which counties performed poorly on a number of factors that impact the voting process. Specifically, we analyzed data in 17 swing states, because we know the swing states have been so determinative of past election results. So coming back and focusing on Arizona, what we found in Arizona is that the counties were with the worst election performance were Yuma, Coconino, and Pinal. Maricopa County also deserves a mention for the high rate of provisional ballots cast and the high rate of absentee ballots rejected. So diving just a little bit deeper, why did these counties come to at the top of our rankings? Yuma and Pinal, we see that they performed very poorly on both voter registration and voter turnout. For Coconino, we saw that they had the second highest rate of provisional ballots cast. In Maricopa, we saw that Maricopa had the highest rate of provisional ballots cast in the state. The rate of provisional ballots cast in Maricopa was actually 76% higher than the state average. Of course, we know that data is not everything. It is not the full the entire story, but it does highlight where some of the potential issues might be. And we're hoping that this information will arm civil rights activists, election officials, and citizens in calling for more change in our election process in a way that reduces barriers to voting and ensures that everyone will have equal access to voting no matter where they live. So with that, I want to turn it over to Sam Wersinski, Executive Director of Arizona Advocacy Network.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity, Anna and Emma, to be on this call with both of you and Robbie. I'd like to just present the solutions that are currently available to our elected officials, to the election officials, many of them simply by changing the election procedures, which don't require going to the legislature. And I'm going to use the city of Phoenix as my first example for how they reduce the number of provisional ballots in their system. First, they have regional voting centers, which we support as an additional means for access to voters. We would still want the local neighborhood precinct sites to be available, but the benefit of the regional centers like Yavapai County has successfully implemented and Yuma County tried to implement in 2012 is that any voter in the county can appear at a regional center, provide their identification, and have a ballot printed specifically for their voting precinct. That has a significant impact on reducing the number of provisional ballots, which seems to be a major focus of our legislature. This is a positive way of reducing provisional ballots versus a negative way of reducing provisional ballots, which was the approach of House Bill 2305. It certainly would have reduced provisional ballots, but at the cost of voters having their ballots counted or actually delivered. And so that would have a negative impact on turnout as well. The city of Phoenix actually only uses a provisional ballot if in their database, when the voter appears at a regional voting center, that their database shows that a mail ballot had already been received. Even if a person is on their permanent early voting list and the data, their database and the regional centers do not show that a ballot has been received, they are able to vote a regular ballot with proper ID. And I'm really impressed with that, and it's the type of system that our state should implement. There's also some other simple ways to reduce the number of provisional ballots and early ballots that are having to be counted after the polls close. The first way to reduce provisional ballots is to simply allow what we call a signature ballot to be cast at the polling location. An individual shows up at their regular polling site, they show their ID, or rather they lack acceptable ID to cast a regular ballot, and instead of being given a conditional provisional for lack of ID, they're given a signature ballot that is essentially the same format as a mail-in or early ballot. They cast that ballot, they sign the outside of the ballot attesting who they are under oath, and then that's put with other early ballots for their signature to be verified, just like other early ballots being dropped off. That would help thousands of voters who do show up without acceptable ID have their ballots cast and counted on election day. A way to reduce the significant number of early ballots that are being dropped off and then having to be counted after the election, which creates additional work for our underfunded election offices, is to allow an individual with an early ballot in hand to show up at their polling location, provide acceptable ID, and then take the ballot out of their envelope and actually run it through the voting machine. There's absolutely no reason why that can't be done. It's simply a procedure that the Secretary of State and county election officials could implement without legislative action. And that is going to reduce the number of early ballots being counted by tens of thousands, if not over 100,000, especially in Maricopa County. So those were some simple solutions that I wanted to offer. We actually presented these to the legislature last year in January, and unfortunately the only suggestion that was adopted was highlighting early ballots by making them, by sending those out in a colored envelope so that people would realize those are an actual ballot and not a sample ballot. But we're pleased they accepted that. But we'll continue to push for these simple, reasonable solutions to have our voters' ballots counted, to reduce the number of provisional and early ballots that are being counted after the fact, and to maintain our election integrity. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sam. Robbie Sherwood, Executive Director for Progress Now Arizona. Robbie, maybe you can talk about some of the efforts that you're seeing in the state and perhaps some of what you saw in 2012.
Sure. Hi, everybody. In terms of the report, I'm not sure if the full report has been provided to the people on the call, so you might explain how they can access it and see the conclusions for themselves. But, you know, in terms of theoretical explanations for why Yuma, Coconino, and Pinal performed so poorly, I can only guess, but I'm sure it's a combination of factors with, you know, large numbers of recent immigrants in southern Arizona and transient populations rural populations, Native American populations, students in Pocono, and in Pinal saw explosive growth from out of state with folks maybe not acclimated and really settled here to where they're registering and participating in elections. So, you know, there may be a variety of explanations for why they performed so poorly. But what really stuck out at me from this report were the large number of provisional ballots cast in Maricopa County. The rate, according to the report, was 37% of the ballots cast on election day were provisionals, and that's 76% higher than the state average. The story on election day was really the amount of time it took to count the ballots and the large numbers of early ballots that arrived on election day and the amount of time it took to them. Really, to me, the story was the provisionals. Why were voters who, you know, eligible voters who were showing up to polling places being given provisionals? I would like, you know, some further, would love to see some further research and explanation as to why this occurred. Sam participated last week in a hearing by the National Commission on Voting Rights that took testimony from a number of people who were election watchers or who witnessed things, you know, anecdotally on election day. And they testified to the fact, and, you know, and I don't, you know, I can't claim the veracity of this, but they testified on this commission in public that they saw people being randomly given provisionals or given provisionals based on their ethnicity, like where Caucasian voters were not given provisionals and voters who appeared to be Latino or Black were given provisional ballots even if they were in the right polling place. I would like some more explanation to see if that was actually the case. But what I do know, there was an excellent report by an attorney, an analysis of the 2012 election by an attorney named Rupali Desai of the firm Gordon Shermer and Brockham in Phoenix, who looked at these provisional ballots and analyzed which ones were counted and which ones were not. And the largest number of ballots that were not counted, the primary reason they were not counted were people who were in the wrong polling place. In Arizona, if you cast a ballot in the wrong polling place, it automatically doesn't count. And so these were folks who were eligible voters who showed up to a polling place that was the wrong place and should have been told that they need to go, you know, should have been directed to the correct polling place. And instead, they were handed provisional ballots. And that number turned out to be over 7,000 voters. So that's 7,000 votes that, had they been given the right instruction, would have counted, but did not in our election. So to me, that speaks to a training and resources issue. What we got in the legislature was House Bill 2305, which was a multi-pronged effort that we believe would just reduce overall turnout, which might make things more convenient for election officials, but would prevent thousands of eligible voters from voting. We think that was wrong. That's why we did the referendum on that, and we put it on the 2014 ballot. What election officials can still do and have the ability to do is prevent these provisionals by better training their election workers to direct people to the right polling places if they're in the wrong place, and not just hand them a provisional, which is essentially throwing that vote in the trash. To that end, you know, I don't have absolute confirmation on this, but I'm told by legislators and staff people that the Secretary of State's office does have resources to provide voter education and training that left over from the Help America Vote Act, HAVA, which was over $40 million provided to the state during the Bush administration. I understand that there's approximately $11 million still within the Secretary of State's office, might be in different pots. It might have different assigned uses, but it's certainly appropriate that a portion of that could and should be used to educate not only voters but poll workers to prevent this large number of provisional ballots. This is an anomaly. I'd really like to know more about why it's occurring, but I think there are steps we can do to bring that number down in Arizona, and I hope that elected officials will take those steps.
Thank you so much. Operator, can you tell our listeners how they can ask a question?
Absolutely. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute button is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is *1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to assemble the queue.
And while the queue assembles, I just wanted to note that you can find the report at AmericanProgressAction.org, or you can email me, Madeline Meth, at mmeth@AmericanProgressAction.org.
And we'll take our first question from Nick Bloomberg with KJZZ.
Hi, I wanted to see if you could talk a little specifically about Yuma and Pinal counties. The issues that you mentioned there, were those largely issues with voter registration, it sounds like, versus provisional ballots, or was it a problem with both?
It seems to be a problem with both. With Yuma, they had, overall in the state, they had the lowest rate, they had the lowest voter turnout rate. And in terms of voter registration, they had the second lowest voter registration rate. For Pinal, the opposite is true. So Pinal had the lowest voter registration rate and the second worst voter turnout rate. So on the two issues, they were either first or second in terms of being worse in the state.
Okay. And, you know, looking at the issue of training poll workers better, is this something that you see, you know, whether there's HAVA money available in other states or not, is this something that you see, you know, nationally, that some of these states where there are issues with the provisional ballots, is there any momentum in those states to get poll workers better trained so that they can help people to understand where they need to go to make sure that their votes actually get counted?
At this time, we have not done an in-depth state-by-state analysis of the resources that local officials have at their disposal to train poll workers. But what we do have seen in other states is similar to what Robbie mentioned, in that you do have a lot of instances and a lot of stories pop up across the states where poll workers may be misdirecting voters. There's instances where poll workers just simply ask the voters to vote a provisional ballot instead of double-checking to see if they are in the right polling location. So we have heard stories across the states.
And Nick, this is Sam Worstinski at Arizona Advocacy Network. I'd like to just add, when it comes to resources, we often see, as we do today, available resources in hand being appropriated for misguided policies. So, for example, with the Attorney General's opinion, and it's only an opinion, moving Arizona to two classes of voters, both in the voter registration process as well as on the ballots where they will actually vote. Maricopa County Elections Department has given figures between $250,000 to $350,000 that it's going to cost them to implement this system. And, you know, I think as of today, there's probably fewer than 1,000 people who would be placed into this second class of voters where they would only get the federal offices on their ballot. That's a misappropriation of funds. And there's no reasonable argument for that to be implemented. We understand that the Secretary of State will have to spend money to implement this system as well. Those monies should be used instead to do voter outreach and to better train the poll workers so that voters are getting the correct ballot and their voices are being heard on election day. Thank you very much.
And we'll take our next question from Caitlin Cruz with Cronkite News.
Hi. You guys talked about some of the historically hurt populations by these policies, college students, Native American populations, elite, potentially immigrant populations. Could you talk about the implications in places like Yuma and Pinal, where you're seeing a higher perpetuation of these policies against these populations?
Sam, you want me to take that?
Go ahead, Robbie. I can add to it if needed.
Well, my first reaction is that, you know, those are areas where, you know, there are a number of organizations, nonprofit, you know, good government organizations out trying to register voters and get them registered for the first time. You know, the state and the counties are not putting resources into registering and educating voters. It's mostly organizations like Mi Familia Vota or even, you know, Sam's organization or others that are out there working to, you know, to turn this around. What invariably happens, though, is if you register a voter and you put them on the early ballot list, and then, as you know, that's one step. The next step is to actually encourage them to vote and to turn out. And you know, slowly but surely, this is turning around. There were extraordinary efforts in Maricopa County. I think you've seen an explosive growth in early voting and Latino turnout, taking, you know, double-digit leaps in percentage that were driven by these efforts and by issues like the Maricopa County Sheriff's election with Sheriff Joe Arpaio and the election of Daniel Valenzuela and other Latino city council members in Phoenix. There may not be the issues that are driving the voter performance in those areas, but I think that there are efforts on the ground to try to change that, to try to, you know, find eligible voters who have never voted before, get them registered and turn them out. But that's a whole process, and it takes you know, a lot of money and a lot of volunteer time to make it happen. And it's just not something that you know, the counties are going to spend any resources on. And when they do, sometimes they mess up. There are two notable examples in Maricopa County that got a lot of notoriety in the last election and raised a lot of suspicion and distrust, in which they sent out mailers indicating on what day you should vote. And in English, it gave the correct election date, and then on the Spanish translation, it gave the wrong election date.
And it was, you know, it was after the election, which
after the election, right? Yeah, so that's, you know, that's that doesn't inspire a lot of trust of folks out there in officials to do the right thing. And so, you know, they need to acknowledge those mistakes and you know, work with the community to try to encourage people to vote. You know, the main reason I want to get on this call is because, you know, solutions like House Bill 2305 only help streamline the process because they reduce participation of eligible voters. They throw roadblocks in front of eligible voters, and we just think that that was wrong. That the solution should be to encourage people to vote, but you know, put the resources into educating them so that they don't make mistakes that get their vote not counted.
Sure, and Caitlin, this is Sam. You know, I'd also like to just, you know, again highlight the use of the federal form. This was a tool that was passed 30 years ago by Congress and signed into law to help make it easier to register to vote so that people would turn out and make our democracy stronger. The only way you have a functioning democracy is by, you know, much participation, as we see in the Egyptian election with their constitutional changes. You know, the military is hoping for significant turnout to legitimize the new constitution. When you don't have people engaged in voting, you don't have a legitimate legitimate outcome, or it's less legitimate. So the use of the federal form was something that Arizona Advocacy Network went to fight for back in 2005 by organizing a group of plaintiffs. It's referred to often as ITC or the Gonzalez case. And we were successful in getting a federal court order on August 9th, 2012, that required election officials to accept the federal form without the additional unnecessary paperwork that our politicians kept insisting on in order to have people registered and then vote. During a 60-day period, so from August 9th until October 6th, when voter registration closed in 2012, there were nearly 12,000 individuals who used the federal form to register and vote. Over 7,000 of those individuals were university students and Latino high school students going to schools in communities of color. That's where the federal form was utilized. Since August 9th of 2012, now over 40,000 individuals have registered to vote using that federal form. Many of those since the AG's opinion, which would put them in that second class of voters. So these are the types of roadblocks we see, not just, you know, that are impacting Pinal and Yuma County, and but rather statewide. And especially we're seeing that the impact in communities of color and among youth voters and those who are in lower economic communities.
Thank you.
At this time, we have no further questions in the queue.
Well, thank you all so much again for joining us for the call today. The report can be found at AmericanProgressAction.org. Thanks so much.